Hey, welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today as we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and took a short break last week to go down to the FDR conference in Orlando, Florida. FDR, of course, standing for Federal Dispute Resolution. And my first guest today, in fact, was a member of a panel at FDR. We were talking about legislation, and that would be Jessica Clement. She is Legislative Director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. Jesse, we got you on the line.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Hey, good to hear from you here on almost north of the Mason-Dixon line. We had a very good session at the FDR last week, and the numbers were pretty disappointing, weren't they?
They were. It's a sign of the times right now. That conference got probably about a third of the attendance it normally does.
Right, and federally employed women, which had been in Orlando the week before, was even worse than that. So agencies are cutting back, and even in cases where they have the funds and the permission to go, we heard that some people were told not to go to these different conferences just because they didn't want it to look bad.
Yeah, that's where we are right now. Members of Congress are looking for any reason to hamper the federal workforce, and attending a conference is somehow now a bad thing, so agencies are really cutting back.
Yeah, well, if there was an orgy in Orlando last week, I must say I wasn't invited, so it seemed to be pretty
probably
safe.
Weren't federal workers either.
Could be. Hey, listen, you've been talking to your NARF members about something, and you talked about a grand bargain, and it doesn't sound like Grand Hotel. It doesn't sound like something good.
Grand bargains in Washington always get me nervous, mainly because we've been able to come up with one over the course of the last 2 years. The fiscal year starts on October 1st. Congress left town last week for a five-week recess. The House is scheduled to be in session just 9 days in September. I'm very skeptical they can get the remaining 8 appropriations bills through the House, through the Senate, and through a conference committee in just 9 days of legislative work.
Yeah, and this is becoming the new norm, too, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, ask anyone when's the last time they weren't operating under SCR, and they'll probably have to think about it for a while.
Yeah, well, I think one of the members of Congress, I think Olympia Snow, and who left, and Carl Levin of Michigan, who was going to leave, both complained that this is one of the problems that in their long tenures in Congress that very few years were budgets approved by both houses under both the Democrats and the Republicans.
That's very true. This year marked the first year the Senate had passed a budget in 4 years, and that was only because legislation was signed into law saying if they didn't, they wouldn't get paid. So that's the life in Washington these days.
Now, while we were in Orlando at the meeting, the Congress did have a productive, you can call it that, week in that they approved a number of bills, I think up to as many as 10, that were really anti-federal worker.
Yep, 10 bills that were aimed at denigrating the service and the services provided by the federal workforce. 3 of them in particular were placed on the suspension calendar. And when bills are on the suspension calendar, what that really means is that debate's limited and it requires 2/3 of the body to pass. Most of these pass by voice vote unless a member of Congress calls for a roll call vote. Those three bills were called, roll call votes were called, and sensing that they weren't going to get the 2/3 necessary to pass them, the House leadership pulled them from the floor and rolled them into one package called the Stop Government Abuse Act, which only then needed to pass by a simple majority, and it did so on Thursday of last week. Provisions of that bill include being able to tape a conversation you have with a federal employee, which usurps state laws in many states. Limiting performance awards, you know, those that are given to the best of the best, and allowing a political appointee to fire a senior executive basically at will.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can nearly usually tell by the name of a bill where it's going. And when the name of the bill is the Stop Government Abuse, you think this is not going to be good for government workers.
Absolutely not. As one reporter pointed out, it's not so much the Stop Government Abuse Act as it is just the Stop Government Act.
Yeah, which may well be the point. Now, you've been making a point with your NARF members about something called the chained CPI, and I commend you for it. At the same time, it's it's a tough sell because it's a very hard thing to explain. The concept is difficult. The implementation is difficult, and it's a long range thing. And yet, you guys are focusing on this chain CPI. What's that all about?
It even sounds scary.
Yeah, it does.
It
sounds like a bad porn movie. Yeah.
Yeah, basically what it is a change in the way inflation is measured, which would change how COLAs are calculated. Right now, annual COLAs for Social Security benefits, federal and military annuities, disability benefits, both for SSDI recipients as well as veterans, are calculated using a formula called the CPIW. It measures the spending habits of urban wage earners under the age of 62. What the chain CPI does is assume that inflation isn't as great as people seem to think it is, because when the price of goods go up, you change your buying habits. Basically, if the price of beef goes up, you buy more chicken. So inflation doesn't hit as hard as economists say it does, because the CPIW does not account for these behavioral adjustments. In short, it's a new way of calculating COLAs that would mean a smaller COLA every year.
Well, and, you know, not to get too cute, but if you're using the beef to chicken analogy, then you go from chicken to turnips, and then from turnips to cat food. I mean,
right.
this could keep on and on, couldn't it?
Absolutely. We have two big problems with the chain CPI, the biggest of which is that the current method, because it measures the spending habits of wage earners under the age of 62, does not account for how seniors spend their money, mainly that seniors spend a lot more on healthcare costs than you and I do. So those over the age of 65 tend to spend 12% of their take-home pay on medical costs. The CPIW measures only accounts for about 5% of your take-home pay going towards medical costs. So seniors are already losing money under the current formula. The chain CPI would only make that worse.
Well, talking about health care and that sort of thing, how serious is this proposal to implement a voucher system in the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program? In other words, if I understand it correctly, the government would give you and me, if we're federal employees, a fixed amount of money each year to buy our health insurance. If we could fit a plan into that and it covered it entirely, we'd be ahead of the game. But if we wanted better coverage or things changed, it could drive people into less desirable plans. Is that correct?
Well, the proposal has been floating for a few years now. It pops up in the House budget the last few years. It was part of the Simpson-Bowles Fiscal Commission report, which would do exactly what you said. Federal employees currently covered under FHVP, including retirees, would get a set amount to spend on health care. If they go over it, tough. You got to cover it the rest of the way. I don't think at this point in time that's something that FEHVP recipients need to worry about. But with this Congress and this political environment, I never say never.
Okay. You are concerned about the possibility of the chain CPI?
Absolutely. The chain CPI, if you implement this across the board, no exemptions for veterans, for those already receiving a very, very low income, you include this as it relates to the tax code, you're looking at a savings of over $350 billion. When members of Congress are working to offset sequestration in the next 9 years, $350 billion looks really, really good.
Yeah, that's getting up there toward a trillion.
Yes, right. We're almost at the end of fiscal year 13. I think what people tend to forget is that sequestration is a 10-year deal. It's not, okay, we just need to make it through the end of FY13 and then we're good again. No, there are going to be even more cuts in FY14 beneath the levels, the already sparse FY13 budget, for people to be worried about. So we're talking less funding, and agency heads have already said, if you give me a budget that's below FY13, it's not furloughs anymore. We're talking now RIFs and layoffs. So Congress, going back to your point about the grand bargain, it was trying to find ways, you know, in conjunction with the White House, to make sure sequestration doesn't take effect over the next 9 years. And they need to find about $1 trillion in spending. When you need to find $1 trillion, over $350 billion is looking pretty good.
Talking real money. Okay, need to take a short break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, federalnewsradio.com. We'll be right back.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life in Boron.
At BAE Systems, protecting troops is always a top priority. That's why we create combat vehicles that not only help them win the fight, but bring them back home. Our vehicles are designed from the ground up with the latest integrated solutions, all with troops in mind. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO, Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
You may think modern-day slavery doesn't happen, but human trafficking is in every country, state, and neighborhood, even yours. Still, there are more people held in slavery today than any other time in human history. Breaking Out Corporation is a proactive anti-human trafficking organization that investigates, identifies, and brings victims home. You have the power. Go beyond just talk. BreakingOutCorp.org needs your help to free human beings from sex trafficking and slavery. Find out how you can help by going to BreakingOutCorp.org.
Here's Leo Scanlon, Chief Information Security Officer at the National Archives and Records Administration, on the Cyber Imperative Panel, sponsored by Worldwide Technology and NetApp.
It's very hard for every agency to build its own fire truck. We need some sort of a fire department that can move in and help us. We can't do the forensics. We call on the Secret Service or the FBI. We just don't have the in-house ability to do a detailed forensic investigation of an attack. When we've had an APT attack, we call our commercial partners to come in and help us sort it out.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com, keyword imperative.
Data security threats are increasing in number and sophistication. Is your agency protected? Cybersecurity experts at Worldwide Technology can help. Worldwide Technology delivers the tools, technology, and expertise you need to secure your entire IT infrastructure. By leveraging NetApp's comprehensive portfolio of cybersecurity technologies, Worldwide Technology can help you protect critical assets, enhance visibility and control, and ensure compliance. Learn how Worldwide Technology and NetApp can help your agency. Visit WWT.com.
Achieve continuous monitoring through the Security Connected Framework from McAfee. Built on more than 2 decades of proven security practices, the Security Connected approach helps agencies improve security posture, optimize security for greater cost effectiveness, and align security strategically with mission objectives. Visit futureagency.com to learn more. That's futureagency.com. For each unique visitor to futureagency.com, $1 will be donated to the Wounded Warrior Project.
If you're not reading federalnewsradio.com, you're missing out on the most read website in the federal market, featuring federal news and information that affects you every day. Here's what readers are saying about federalnewsradio.com.
I get updated on what's happening before we get the announcement from headquarters.
I get news here I can't seem to find anywhere else.
Federal News Radio treats federal employees as if we were human. What a refreshing change.
Make it your daily read for the news you need. federalnewsradio.com.
My Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Jessica Clement. She is Legislative Director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And before that, Jesse spent some time on Capitol Hill. She worked for the Federal Managers Association, so she has a very broad view of this thing. Jessica, before the break, you were talking about, I get the sense that these may be the good old days right now, furloughs and things notwithstanding, because come October 1, they're talking about RIFs.
I'd like to remain optimistic mm-hmm. and not think that these are the good old days, especially as someone whose household has been affected by these furloughs. But it may be that we look back and say, hey, that wasn't that bad.
That's right. Your husband brought home a couple of short paychecks here, didn't he?
That he has. He's got a couple left, too.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Well, we talk about the grand bargain and what the Congress has been doing. What else is on the horizon? What's on the agenda for federal workers? I mean, as you pointed out, the House, when they come back, has only, 9 working days left to do anything. But they could do some mischief in that time, couldn't they?
Oh, that they could. I think, as you and I saw when we were in Orlando last week, is that people are really, really worried about their paychecks. So you and I had an opportunity for an hour and a half to interact with active federal employees and hear their concerns. And they want to know about the pay freeze, about furloughs, if they're going to continue to face these in the coming years. I think it would be wise for active federal employees to start planning for a fourth and possibly a fifth year of the pay freeze. NARF and other organizations that represent federal employees are working very hard to ensure at least the 1% pay raise the president proposed for 2014. But when you have a financial situation like the one Congress is currently in, that becomes less and less likely the closer we get to the start of the fiscal year. So I'm optimistic that the tide will start to turn, but I think your listeners should be planning as if it won't.
Well, the federal unions, federal and postal unions, all supported candidate Obama's election and reelection. They were happy to do it, and they thought this was going to give them some protection from the Republicans and then later on the Tea Party Republicans. But I think they got a surprise with, A, the 2-year pay freeze was a proposal from the White House, from the Obama administration, and then, as Bob Woodward reported in the Washington Post, the sequestration concept was developed at the White House, presented to Harry Reid, the majority leader in the Senate, and then it sort of became law. So I think a lot of people have been surprised or maybe blindsided. Do you think?
I think a lot of people are sitting back and wondering, who are our friends? Who are our friends in Congress? Who are our friends in the administration? No one across the country has been asked to sacrifice the way the federal community has. We've taken this enough is enough approach. Federal employees to date have given $114 billion, over the next 10 years, because that's how Congress measures things in 10-year increments, $114 billion. Who else has been asked to give that much? Enough is enough. It's time to find this money elsewhere.
Well, what happened? Because 2009 was arguably the best year, at least on Capitol Hill, that federal workers have ever had. A number of bills that had been pending forever were passed, some new things were passed, phased retirement and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of people thought happy days are here again. And then in just a year, it turned it around. Do you know what happened?
2009 was a great year. I'm not going to deny that. It kept me very busy, and the outcome was extremely positive for federal employees. At the end of 2009, the first article in a major newspaper came out saying that federal employees are overpaid compared to their private sector counterparts, done by their own data. It was a USA Today article who took numbers from FedScope and compared it to professions and came up with their own conclusions. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has determined that federal employees are underpaid on average by about 34%. We trust the Bureau of Labor Statistics to measure unemployment, to measure the economic state of our country, but for somehow when they measure federal employee pay, everyone seems to think that they are self-interested. So I think December 2009 is when this whole anti-federal employee sentiment really started kicking off, but it died down pretty quickly. And then as we started going through 2010, another one of those articles appeared in USA Today. I believe it was when you and I were at the FDR conference in August of that year, saying, again, federal employees are overpaid. And when you have an unemployment rate in the country somewhere between 9% and 10%, the grass is always greener mentality starts to set in, and there was a strong anti-federal employee sentiment from across the country.
Well, and it's the kind of thing, too. The data everybody's using is the same. The interpretation is different. And when you say that the average federal worker makes more than the average American, that's a no-brainer. Of course they do. The government, you know, as I am fond of saying, Uncle Sam doesn't do retail. You know, there are no McDonald's.
Right.
There are no Walmarts. There are no Walmart greeters who work for Uncle Sam. It's a different, it's a much more highly educated, a better trained outfit, and it's going to pay better. When you get into the job-by-job comparisons, that's where people differ.
Exactly. I was listening to the House debate last week about federal employee pay, and you know the talking point was senior executives make $168,000 a year. This is too much. My constituents would kill for this. There are less than 7,000 senior executives in the country. These are the best and brightest the federal workforce has to offer. They can leave federal government and make five times that amount somewhere else, you know, but you only look at it from your paycheck. If you're making less than $168,000, you really think that's a good deal. There is a tide in this country, and members of Congress are riding the wave with their constituents. They're furthering this mentality, even though the facts don't support it. And it's something NARF and the other federal employee groups are working really hard to overcome, but the forces are really stacked against us.
I know you don't like to go out and do a crystal ball thing, and if I had been doing it over the past few years, I would have been consistently wrong. But is anything drastic going to happen to feds between now and the fiscal year?
I'm with you, Mike. I had thought for sure, you know, we were nearing that government shutdown in August of 2011, almost exactly 2 years ago. I really thought they could get it done. I really thought you put Speaker Boehner and the president in a room and these two guys can hammer it out. I've been optimistic this whole time, and like you, I have been wrong every single time. I hate to do the crystal ball thing, and you know that, but with 9 legislative days coming in September, I think we're looking at a CR, at least to begin with. The question is going to be at what levels. Will the CR be the House budget levels, the Senate budget levels, which are, you know, close to the president's proposed budget for FY14? Is it going to be at the Budget Control Act levels? I think we can count on one thing, and that's a CR, but the devil's in the details, and what that means for agencies really remains to be seen.
Right, and continuing a resolution, of course, is the way government has been operating for the past few years. Rather than passing a budget, they just carry on. So in some respects, you're operating on budgets that are 4 or 5 years in the past.
Exactly. But now with the Budget Control Act, these levels are set out. If you remember what happened last year, you know, sequestration was set to take effect at the start of this year. Start of this calendar year. They did a CR through the end of last year, and then they were busy working on January 4th, and all they did was punt sequestration for 2 months, and then it started taking effect in March. So predicting where this Congress is going to go has proven a lot harder in the last couple of years.
Okay. And the thing, again, you're warning your members about is the chained CPI. And go through that again real quick.
Right now, the biggest issue on NARF's plate is the chained CPI. And this would affect everyone. This isn't a federal employee issue, federal retiree issue. This is an issue for anyone who receives government benefits of any kind, disability insurance, veterans benefits, federal annuities, or Social Security. It is a change in the way the annual cost of living adjustment is calculated. On the bottom line, it means a smaller COLA every year. Every year you will be drawing federal benefits, Social Security benefits. It gets smaller every year.
And I think you said at the FDR conference it was something like 0.3% less each year.
Absolutely. It's 0.3% less every year, which in the first year, the first 5 years, you're like, all right, that's not that big of a deal. But if you look at the average CSRS annuitant who probably doesn't have Social Security to draw from, and even if they do, it's drastically reduced because of the windfall elimination provision. So you look at the average CSRS retiree who takes in about $31,000 a year in its annual pension. And this may be that person's only pension over a 25-year period, which is not an unreasonable amount to draw these benefits, as Several CSRS employees can retire at age 55. You retire at age 55, you live for 25 years. That is a loss for you of over $48,000. This is not a small amount. It may be 0.3, but when you add it up over time, it is a huge chunk of money.
Yeah, I see almost every day in the Washington Post obits of people who have been retired longer than they worked.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It's now, where is the administration on this change CPI?
The administration, for the first time, included it in its FY14 budget that it submitted to Congress. We were incredibly disappointed to see that in the president's budget, as we feel, you know, it's a way of taking three steps towards the Republicans in terms of a compromise while they continue to take three steps back. You know, the president and some Democratic members of Congress who are kind of on the fence about the change CPI are saying, well, I'd go along with it, but only if it's part of a bigger deal. Yeah. And for the Democrats, that means a change in the tax code, an increase in taxes for the wealthiest. You know, from a NARF perspective, I don't seem to understand how an increase in taxes for the wealthy somehow offsets a huge benefit cut for our nation's seniors, disabled, and veterans.
All right. Last word. Thank you very much, Jessica. Always good to have you, and we'll talk to you again. Jessica Clement from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Hugh Scott, a retired Navy hospital corpsman and nurse. For over 27 years, I took care of the wounded, but in 2010, I became the patient. All of a sudden, VA's patient portal, My Healthy Vet, became my online safety net. I rely on My Healthy Vet for continuity of care, to manage my health records, and ease my anxiety as a cancer patient. Having information available to me 24/7 on VA's My Healthy Vet helps me feel more in control. With My Healthy Vet, I can communicate with my doctors using secure messaging, view my VA lab results, and even see my VA clinical notes. It's proven. More and more veterans are using My Healthy Vet and getting the upgraded account to do more online. Veterans want this information. It's your care. It's your life. My Healthy Vet is celebrating 10 years of online access. If you're not online, do like I did and enroll today at www.myhealth.va.gov.
This week's Experts in Health topic is heat-related illnesses, featuring Dr. Ann Hellerstein, a pediatrician with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Gaithersburg Medical Center.
In the summer, when your child is exercising or spending time in the sun, it's important to be aware of heat-related illnesses. Exercising during hot weather and overdressing increase your child's risk. Chills, dark-colored urine, dizziness, dry mouth, headaches, thirst, and weakness are common signs of heat-related illness in children. To prevent this, make sure your child drinks plenty of water before, during, and after being active, and takes a hydration break every 20 minutes. Also, when temperatures hit over 100 degrees, it's important to encourage your child to play indoors rather than outside.
Dr. Hellerstein was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine and was a 2012 Washington Post Super Doctor. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Here's Rear Admiral Robert Day, CIO, U.S. Coast Guard, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by HP.
We thought we were in configuration. We weren't. And now with the tools that we have, we're being able to standardize configurations across the entirety of the IT platform, which then gives you the ability to secure better. So the tools we're getting, the new skill sets of the people that we're bringing in to look at this, those are really ending up providing us with a more secure platform.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys now have a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help you secure critical applications to run your agency's most vital operations by designing security in from the beginning, finding vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. Make security matter. HP.com/go/cybersecurity.
When faced with opportunities and challenges, it's important to have a reliable information technology partner on your side. Make a confident choice with GovConnection. Our extensive experience serving the federal marketplace ensures we can identify and apply the right purchasing vehicles to equip your organization with the right tools to accomplish your mission. The IT marketplace is full of companies who claim to be different. Choose GovConnection. Call 800-800-0019. Sponsored by Fluke Networks. Technology, expertise, and reliability that expands capability while reducing cost.
Mosquitoes thrive in wet environments, which might seem strange in one respect. How do their fragile bodies survive the impact of raindrops 50 times their weight? Mosquitoes have long wings and legs, so they just get momentarily spun in the air when a raindrop applies a glancing blow, says David Hu, a Georgia Tech engineer. He used high-speed videos to show even in a direct hit because the insect's so light.
The mosquito and the drop, they sort of join together, and they fall together for about 5 to 20 body lengths before separating.
That's only a problem very close to the ground. So Hu says engineers making tiny robotic flyers could mimic a mosquito's lightweight design to reduce the force of any impacts. And
we think if designers build in these long appendages, it'll basically allow them to always separate from the colliding object without even trying.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here with Congress, and we, the music keeps on and on and on. Hi, I'm Mike Causey. Welcome back to Your Turn. Going to be talking with Sean Riley. He is a senior writer with the Federal Times. So much going on. This is supposed to be August and July are supposed to be the dog days, but lots going on. Sean, are you with us? Sean, are you there?
Yes.
Yes. Hey, welcome back. We had a couple weeks break, so glad to have you back with us. Awful lot of stuff going on, considering this is supposed to be a dead time of year.
I had the same thought. Yesterday we had the big announcement that the Defense Department is going to be cutting the number of furlough days for civilian employees from 11 to 6. And then today, just an hour or so ago, the Office of Personnel Management announced that it has come up with a solution which should resolve an impasse over the nomination of Catherine Archuleta to head OPM.
Okay, on the defense thing first, because I'm losing track because IRS is doing it, EPA is doing it, HUD, EEOC, but defense said they were going to have a total of 11 days.
That's correct.
And they're now down to 6.
That's right.
And so it should be maybe just one more.
Yeah, that's what they're saying for most, you know, and we're talking about 650,000 or so DOD civilians who are affected here. For most of them, next week will be their final furlough day, or their final furlough day will be next week.
Okay, so it started out as 22.
That's right.
Then they dropped it to 11. Now it's down to 6.
That's right. Thanks to the magic of reprogramming and various cost-cutting steps, you know, efforts to find money to reduce the number of furlough days.
Right. Were you hearing, Sean, during all of this that the Navy said it didn't need to furlough, but it was kind of overruled and told we're all in this, it's all on the same ship, as
that
it
was,
were.
Yeah, essentially, that, yeah, exactly. That the Navy, you know, they claimed it had the money, that it did not need to resort to furloughs, but the position, I think, of DOD leadership, and I think this goes up to Secretary Hagel, was that they wanted to apply the same policy essentially across the board equitably at all the services, and that is what they've done.
Yeah, I wonder what, if anything, that will do to these thousands and thousands of cases that are being filed with the Merit Systems Protection Board, because people have to have grounds for a complaint, correct?
Well, I asked that question yesterday, and the board is not commenting on that question. Presumably, I would assume since all of these people were furloughed, that their appeal, there would still be some basis for their appeal, you know, on the grounds that the furloughs affect the efficiency of government service. But whether there be some sort of procedural issues that might arise or something else that might impede processing of these furlough appeals, I'm not sure at this point.
Yeah, normally in cases like this, typically it's an individual or a couple of people, but they will file on the grounds of discrimination, either race, sex, ethnicity, publicity or whatnot, and they'll say he got he was spared and I was furloughed. But in this case, if you got 650,000 people who were furloughed, I would think it's hard to make a case in that basis.
And it could be maybe that was one consideration DOD had in terms when it decided to go ahead and apply these furloughs regardless of an individual service's financial status.
Right, because if the Navy, if a third of the workforce somehow or other found a way out, that could undercut them.
Precisely.
Yeah. This OPM impasse, Ms. Archuleta, they were going to hold up her nomination until what?
Well, what happened, this arose kind of as a sleeper issue, I think, to most of us who were covering her nomination. She had a hearing a few weeks ago, which didn't seem to, raise any flags. And then last week, the Senate committee that oversees OPM held a confirmation vote, and she passed a party line vote 6-4. And then Senator Tom Coburn, the committee's top Republican, said that he was placing a hold on her nomination. The reason being is there is a wrinkle in the 2010 health care law, which most people know as Obamacare, which requires members of Congress and at least some of their staffs to begin buying insurance, health insurance on the state-based exchanges, which are supposed to be up and running by January. As a result, they'll have to leave the federal employees' health benefits program. But the law, and this was an amendment, ironically, that was introduced by a Republican senator, doesn't say whether OPM, the government, would have to contribute the same amount or contribute anything, really, to the cost of those premiums. And for FHPP participants, it's around 72% to 75%, so that's a significant amount of money, potentially. And so Senator Coburn decided that he was going to hold up Ms. Archuleta's nomination until OPM provided some clarification on that. And lo and behold, within a week, OPM has done so. It says that now it will provide the same cover, essentially the same contribution for anyone who has to buy, any lawmaker or staff member has to buy coverage on these state exchanges that it does for FEHBP participants.
In a TV whodunit, they'd call that blackmail, wouldn't they?
Well, I think it's a meeting of the minds, Mike.
Yeah.
It's just a resolution of an outstanding issue. Now, I should add, OPM was scheduled to issue a rule on this in October, but reportedly because of some White House intervention, it appears that the process was accelerated a little bit.
So does this mean then that members of Congress, representatives, senators, and their staff will be leaving the federal employee health benefits program?
Well, there are a number of questions, according to a Congressional Research Service report that came out a couple of years ago. One is the law apparently clearly applies to all staff members on the Hill are not created equal.
Mm-hmm.
The law clearly applies to personal staff members of members of Congress, personal staffers of members of Congress. But according to CRS, it's unclear whether it applies to leadership staff members and those professional staffers who work on the committees. And that's a pretty large group of folks. It's also unclear whether current members of Congress and their personal staffs could be grandfathered into the FEHBP, which is what I assume a lot of them would like to do, rather than go to the trouble of having to find new coverage on these state exchanges. And in the proposed regulation that OPM released today, it'll be up to Congress to decide a lot of these questions on the grounds that Congress knows best. Congress wrote the law, so Congress is best suited, I guess, to interpret it.
So will Congress decide whether it goes into the exchanges or whether it remains in the FEHBP?
I think, well, I'm going out on a limb here.
Yeah.
My guess would be that Congress will decide whether current members can continue to participate in the FEHBP. According to the CRS report, it seems clear that, future members of Congress will have to participate in the in the state exchanges, and so will their personal staffs. But again, it'll be up to Congress to decide whether committee staff and leadership staff will can keep getting their coverage through the FEHBP or whether they'll have to go to these state exchanges.
Well, I know a couple of months ago, and I'm sure you were hearing the same thing, but we were getting calls from people on the Hill who said their colleagues, many of them were talking about quitting or actually retiring now so that they would be grandfathered into the FEHBP in retirement.
Well, yeah, I think that was the basis of Senator Coburn's concerns that you were going to have a quote-unquote brain drain. As a lot of staffers and, the committee staffers are really the backbone of a lot of congressional expertise. These people have often been around for years. They know the process. they know the history of individual bills and the creation of individual statutes, so that would be a big loss if they did leave. But there were concerns that these people would head for the exits rather than have to pay thousands of extra dollars each year in congressional, in health insurance premiums. And they would, as you indicated, I believe, be grandfathered into FHA participation in retirement if they left before the law took effect.
Right. And it seems to me that down the road, and maybe not that far down the road, I think one of the great strengths of the federal retirement system is that it mimics the congressional retirement system. The congressional system is more generous, and they pay more for it, but they're very similar. By the same token, the FEHBP, it covers a senator as well as it does a clerk at the archives. Mm-hmm. Same plan, same premiums, and all that sort of thing. But I wanted to ask you about what the impact might be down the road if members of Congress are separated from the FEHBP. But we got to take a short break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Be right back.
What makes PowerJobs.com powerful? It's you. PowerJobs.com was created for you, the Washington area professional working in federal contracting, nonprofit and association industries, technology, and government relations. PowerJobs.com features thousands of top-level openings from hundreds of the region's leading employers. There's already been 2 million job searches on PowerJobs.com so far this year. Tap into the power of PowerJobs.com, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com, empowering today's top talent.
Don't miss game day the Navy way this fall in Annapolis. Order your 2013 Navy football season tickets today and secure your reserve seat for the Navy versus Air Force game on Saturday, October 5th. Tickets are going fast. Get the best seats now by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY or by visiting NavySports.com. That's 1-800-US-4-NAVY or NavySports.com to get yours today. Navy football, game day, the Navy way.
Here's Ari Baranoff, assistant to the special agent in charge at the Secret Service, on the Cyber Imperative panel, sponsored by Worldwide Technology and NetApp.
Our strategy is to focus on mainly the professional hackers, individuals out there making enormous amounts of money, and in many cases, reinvesting some of the ill-gotten gains into developing new capabilities, attack tools, infrastructure. So it is quite challenging. The more they make, the better they get.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com, keyword imperative.
Data security threats are increasing in number and sophistication. Is your agency protected? Cybersecurity experts at Worldwide Technology can help. Worldwide Technology delivers the tools, technology, and expertise you need to secure your entire IT infrastructure. By leveraging NetApp's comprehensive portfolio of cybersecurity technologies, Worldwide Technology can help you protect critical assets, enhance visibility and control, and ensure compliance. Learn how Worldwide Technology and NetApp can help your agency. Visit WWT.com.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington. Great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
You can join State Department Federal Credit Union today and enjoy a $50 bonus, and that's just the beginning of your benefits. Take advantage of an SDFCU free checking account and earn rewards points just by using your debit card. That's right, rewards with your debit card. You'll have access to 29,000 ATMs, mobile deposit, and option to design your own card. Get your $50 bonus and rewards. Visit joinsdfcu.org. That's joinsdfcu.org.
SDFCU is federally insured by NCUA.
The Information Management Minute, provided by Iron Mountain.
Federal providers across the country are preparing to comply with a provision of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 to create and show meaningful use of electronic medical records to retain their existing Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement levels. Electronic health records will help to keep patients informed, improve care, reduce health disparities, and improve security of patient information. Hitting this milestone requires a strategic approach to record conversion, backup plans, and the appropriate destruction of paper records that are still in use.
Is your agency looking to realize better efficiencies and cost savings through a proven information management program? Iron Mountain stores and protects billions of information assets, including paper records, backup tapes, electronic files, and medical data, helping federal agencies manage their entire information lifecycle. Learn more at ironmountain.com/radio.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Government contractors are helping federal employees across the country who are losing pay to furloughs. If your organization is asking, how can we help? The Federal Employee Education and Assistance Fund, FEA, offers no interest loans to feds in need. Loans are made only for necessities like rent, mortgage, or utilities. A recent $25,000 donation by a contractor extended loans by an entire week. Your company can help keep the lights on or ensure a federal family continues to have a roof over its head. Help feds in need today. Go to feea.org/corporate-support.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Sean Riley. He is a senior writer with the Federal Times. That was interesting hearing that FEA public service announcement there, Sean. I think they've given it to date 148 no-cost or no-interest loans to federal workers, primarily because of the furlough situation. And that's a drop in the bucket, but for those 148 people, that must be a godsend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, they have their demand, with last time I talked to them, was definitely spiking. And yeah, you have to presume it is because of the furloughs.
Yeah, and they do have some very generous corporate sponsors. In some cases, the corporate sponsors have put in half of the total amount of money that FEA has to loan out. Now, before the break, we were talking about members of Congress in the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. So it appears that current members will be grandfathered in, and they can remain in the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program, I guess, into retirement as well?
I'm not sure. Again, there seem to be a lot of uncertainties regarding the application of the law. So that remains to be seen, I think.
That would be my bet that's going to happen. But suppose you have a situation here where new members of Congress, those elected in 2014, coming in, they'll come into the exchanges. They won't be part of the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. Most of them won't know what they're missing. Probably. They won't be familiar with how good the FEHBP is. And if the government continues to pay 72% of whatever premium they get into in their own on the exchange. But it would seem to me that over time, the fact that they're separated from the FEHBP, they won't be as generous toward it.
You raise a fascinating question, and I guess we'll just have to see how it plays out. I mean, actuarially, you know, members of Congress leaving the FEHBP will have no real effect. Because there's such a small group of the total population. But yes, it could. Yeah, I guess you potentially could see some sort of divergence of the interests of members of Congress in the FHBP since they're no longer members of it. You know, this is a very touchy political issue because members of Congress don't want to be seen, at least publicly, as giving themselves preferential treatment over their constituents. So that's one reason Senator Grassley put this amendment in. But at the same time, there is a decent possibility that they may end up with coverage through these state exchanges, which is not as good as what they get now through the FEHBP.
I would think that's going to happen for sure. I stay in touch with a lot of people that I've dealt with in government after they retire, primarily because I like them. But also it's interesting to find out 5 and 10 years after the fact what really happened, you know, what we were reporting versus what really happened. And I talked to a fellow one time who had headed the federal health insurance and retirement program for many, many years. And he ran it. He was a career civil servant, wonderful guy, never, you know, gave away the company state secrets or anything like that. But he told me once, and he's not the kind of person that exaggerated, that there had not been a single Retirement Act improvement that happened while he was in government. There had not been a single one that didn't benefit a particular member of Congress or a member of congressional staff. So there was something written into it that took care of somebody.
My gosh, well, that does lead to some interesting implications for the future if they are no longer
right.
members of it.
Well, in one case, I remember there was a congressman, and I think he'd been married three times, and part of the deal about a retirement date was to be able to cut his second wife out of a portion of his annuity, and the law was written that way. So one can become very cynical after a while.
With reason in some cases.
Yeah. So what else are you working on?
We're just trying to keep up. I mean, we're looking ahead. I mean, the big storm that's brewing, and this certainly came up yesterday in the announcement of the reduction of DOD furlough days, is, of course, we're less than 2 months away from the start of the fiscal 2014 year in October. There is absolutely no semblance of, or even hint of an agreement between the House and Senate on what those fiscal 2014 spending bills are going to look like. And there's, the possibility of another round of sequestration. And for DOD, which, of course, is the largest government and federal employer, they're looking at an additional cut, according to Secretary Hagel, of $52 billion. And, we had a briefing with a couple of defense officials who the rules were they cannot be named. But mm-hmm. we asked one of them about what's on the, what are you looking at if there is another round of sequestration? And her response was that everything's on the table, and that would include reductions in force. And other agencies are facing, perhaps not as dramatically, facing, similar conundrums about how do you plan when you have absolutely no idea what your budget's going to be. There's a likelihood there would be a continuing resolution starting in the beginning of October, but again, there's no real certainty. And you have some Republican members of Congress essentially advocating for a partial government shutdown rather than let Obamacare, full implementation of Obamacare proceed.
Yeah, you have the people are looking at the Internal Revenue Service, too, because it has a major role in the implementing and monitoring the Affordable Care Act. And there's some members of Congress who want to go after that and cripple that operation.
Right. Well, the House in the spending bill that covers the IRS essentially blocked or has proposed blocking any use of funding for the IRS to implement its part of Obamacare. And of course, that's not exactly a popular idea with the Obama administration. And, it's threatening to veto the bill, as it is a number of other appropriations bills. Apparently some senators are talking to the White House, attempting to reach a compromise or some sort of agreement. But it's not at all clear what the contours of that, any such deal would be.
Well, you have there's talk of a continued pay freeze for another year or even 2 years, and yet the president's budget, I believe, it proposes a 1% pay raise for federal workers.
That's right, and in its version of the 2014 defense spending bill, the Senate Appropriations Committee incorporated that 1% increase, as the Senate has in its budget for its proposed budget for FY14. The House has not, and it's not clear that it will. So again, there's just no indication of which way this could go. But certainly. Federal employees, based on recent history, ought to be prepared for the worst.
Yeah, those of us who said there would never be a pay freeze had to eat a lot of crow. That was one of them. The idea of a pay freeze originally came from the Obama administration, the 2-year segment from the Simpson-Bowles Commission, which had actually, in fact, recommended a 3-year pay freeze. But they seem now to have adopted this idea of the chain CPI. The White House would go along with it.
That's right. I mean, and this is, this would affect, cost of living increases for retirees. I mean, the big impact, and where it's what makes it a very volatile issue, is that it would affect COLAs for Social Security recipients down the road. And that's the main point of it, is it would essentially, it's according to many economists, it does provide a more accurate measure of inflation than what the government currently uses. But it would also, in general, be a little more conservative and result in smaller increases, smaller COLA increases over time. The administration has signed on to that. It could be, if there ever were, and that seems increasingly unlikely these days, a kind of grand bargain over federal spending and entitlements. Chain CPI would likely be a part of it, but at this point, we're not even close.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing, too, given the power of the Social Security lobby, one in six people, you'd think if people understood it, there'd be a groundswell, but people don't seem to understand it. Got to leave it there. Thank you, Sean Riley, for being with us. Talk to you next week, I hope. See you all out there. Be careful and buckle up.
My pleasure, Mike. Thank you.